And welcome. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio on a vacation-ridden, vacation-riddled next couple of days for the show. We're going to have a couple of days where we're not doing the show at all, including this upcoming Friday, a couple days next week for the July 4th holiday as well. Usually, Bill Cameron is in the house, and Drew is at the controls. They're both off today for personal reasons. Drew's got some business to attend to, and Bill is enjoying his tropical. Bill's smart for doing this, though. He takes a vacation in a popular beach community, but he does it the week before July 4th. When he was on campus, he could do this because it was a relatively quiet time on campus, and it didn't create any issues for him to be gone for a couple of days versus other times in the calendar year. And then also, the weather's very nice, you know, everything you can see. And he said this earlier in the week, so I don't feel like I'm pulling back the curtain here talking about he's going to Pensacola, which, you know, he's a place he's visited a bunch of times and near where I grew up. And so, yeah, hopefully weather cooperates and Bill gets to have a lot of incidents in the Gulf of Mexico. I know the Sharks get the publicity, and it, understandably so, because it's when a shark attack is that's something that'll you can sell papers with a shark attack. But the currents and the riptides have been really dangerous. So be safe out there. I know it's double red flags throughout most of the beaches. Hopefully people use those to, you know, they actually follow the guidance there, which I believe is stay out of the water completely on double red flag days. So be safe. And if you're like Bill Cameron, if you're going to the beach this weekend or in the for the July 4th holiday, I know a lot of folks are going to be traveling in the next couple of weeks. A lot of our usual guests are traveling, including on a Wednesday we would have Jason Caldwell from Inside the Auburn Tigers, and he's in fact traveling with his family this week because it's one of the few times where it's a little bit quiet for the beat writers, although there have been headlines. You know, just we were talking yesterday on the show about the lack of pressing breaking news outside of the College World Series and the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, you do have the NBA draft tonight. I think the fact that the top two picks are likely to be foreign / relatively obscure players, guys who didn't play college basketball, that takes a little bit of the sizzle away. The fact that there isn't a guy in this draft who, you know, you feel really confident is going to be a great NBA player or even an effective starter 5 years from now, you know, feel like it's a gamble with a lot of these guys in a way that usually Wemby, for instance, you didn't feel like it was a gamble with, you know, some of the top players in recent years in the draft. And people talk about next year's draft, including Cooper Flagg, who Auburn will see in the Auburn-Duke game this year. People talk about the 2025 draft as a more star-studded draft. But again, that could change based on how a lot of those players look in there. I mean, people felt good about Isaiah Collier a year ago when he was the top point guard coming out of high school. Sounds like he's not going to be a lottery pick in this draft. So, you know, a lot of that can change depending on, and I guess there's intrigue on how Bronny James, you know, will do tonight, or whether or not he'll be selected or where. It feels like this is entirely with Bronny based around the fact that he's like, if he had been a more effective college basketball player, or if he seemed like a more sure prospect for the NBA, maybe the novelty wouldn't entirely be that he's LeBron James's son. But it seems like and I wish him luck. I mean, I kind of wish, you know, people want this storybook LeBron and his son playing, you know, dominating the NBA together storyline, and that'd be cool to see, but I kind of wish Bronny had been a better college basketball player in his 1 year playing college basketball, or had stuck around and turned into a dominant college basketball player, so it wouldn't feel as forced as it does. Where, I mean, a guy who probably wasn't a top 30 player in the Pac-12 last year is being talked about as though he should be in an NBA rotation as a rookie because his father is LeBron James. And so I'm a little like that. To me, it's less interesting than a lot of other aspects. But again, the big issue there is because the top two picks are obscure non-college basketball players who played professional basketball overseas, and the college players are dice rolls themselves. There's a lack of super compelling stuff in tonight's NBA draft compared to other ones. We'll see if stars are on the move or anything. Jacob is hanging out for the 2 hours, by the way. Yeah. Wanted to mention that at some point. Jacob is sticking around for the 2 hours today. I appreciate Jacob doing that. We're going to talk some media days at some point. But Jacob, your thoughts on... you know what? We'll start with the NBA draft since and there is coverage tonight on ESPN 106.7 of
that
the
is correct.
ESPN Radio's coverage of the NBA draft. We will have that, so you can listen in as some big names, especially from this past year of college basketball. Reed Sheppard, Dalton Connect.
I was going to say Dalton Connect,
likely in the top five.
Yeah. So we will have coverage of the first round tonight here on ESPN 106.7. It'll come on right after the drive. Not carrying it tomorrow because it starts mid-afternoon. It starts like 2 or 3 o'clock, something weird like that. So won't be able to carry it tomorrow, but we will have first round coverage tonight. And I think you hit it pretty spot on where nowadays in the NBA draft, you have so many overseas foreign players from France and playing in European leagues and playing in these other organizations where people just don't know who they are in the United States. Now, overseas in the countries they play in, these guys are celebrities. They're superstars, and they're going to be really good players. And look around the NBA as it is today. Some of the best players in the league are not American. You look at Luka Doncic. You look at Giannis. You look at Joel Embiid. I mean, you look at guys who were not from here are taking over Nikola Jokic. I mean, guys that are taking over the NBA who slowly started this trend. And so, yeah, for a draft class tonight, I mean, there are experts saying it's one of the worst classes in decades because it's just not very attractive. It's not overly sexy, if you will. And they're still good players. It's just not one of those classes and one of those drafts that's going to be looked on in history, I don't think, as one of the best ever, but it doesn't mean there aren't good players.
Is there a player in this draft that you feel very, very confident will be a good NBA player 3 or 4 years from now? Is there somebody that stands out where you're like, you know what? He's going to be a big piece of a good team in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Because I think is part of the problem is that the list of guys that you would say that about in this draft is shorter than in your usual NBA draft, and certainly in the last couple. Like that would be part of, and then I guess because the foreign aspect, like even the fact that the top two picks in the draft are going to be a Frenchman and a dude from Australia, like to me that's not a guy who was playing professional basketball last year in Australia. I don't know if that's where Saar is. I think he's Australian, but it's more that they're total unknowns, and they are projected as like projects. Like they're guys that are going to take a couple of years, as opposed to like people thought Luka or Wemby. Like they were coming in as international players, but they were coming in as international players that people felt confident were going to be starters from day one and ready to roll. I feel like these two guys are projected as it could take a little while for them to adjust, which is a dangerous thing with a team. If you're bad enough to be picking one or two, if you're going full rebuild, I guess it's easier, but you'd rather have more of a sure thing with a first pick or a second pick. And unfortunately for the Hawks and the Wizards, picking 1-2?
The Hawks 1, Wizards 2, Rockets 3, Spurs at 4.
It's a tough draft for the Hawks and the Wizards because usually something that feels like more of a sure thing is there at 1 or 2, and instead, I mean, you have your pick at 2. You have your pick of virtually anyone in this draft, and it's like let's gamble on a guy who's who might turn into a really effective player in a couple years. But it's, I mean, it's it's a Usually it's not that tough of a decision.
And I think what will back that up is if you start looking at all these different mock drafts and how they are all different. They all kind of differ on who should take who and when, right? All these teams, they all have different needs. They all have different wants, but typically, and the mindset that I always subscribe to is if you have a top five pick in any draft, NBA, NFL, NHL, I don't care. You have a top five pick in the draft, unless you are just, you have no centers on the roster, no quarterbacks or whatever the case may be, I subscribe to the line of thinking of take the best available player. And you could argue who that is. And for it to not to be the, you know, the terms you were using were be a sure thing. It's, there is no, I feel, no just instant impact player where they're going to step in and be the man immediately. And you've had those types of players in the past. Not saying these guys can't be or they won't be. It's just not a sure thing, like you said.
And it's interesting, too, because what does best available mean? In the sense of, like, imagine, because this happened in draft 20 years ago, where it's like, imagine two players, and one of them is 19-year-old European player who's rough around the edges, but you think one day he could be an MVP caliber player, but mm-hmm. it might take a while. The other player was a superstar college basketball player who seems like he could be, you wonder how much better he's going to get, but he could be a starter and maybe competing to be an all-star right now. It's like, do you take the lottery ticket that could go for some, because that's kind of the Carmelo Anthony versus Darko.
Yeah.
Like that was the thinking that the Detroit Pistons take Darko over Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, mm-hmm. thinking that, like, oh, well, there's an unknown, a pile of magic beans that could one day, you know, become like something really, really great. And so we don't need college basketball superstars that could. And so, and I don't know. I mean, it's probably not the same thing with Reed Sheppard and Dalton Knecht and the guys from the UConn team this past year.
Yeah.
Because they're the closest comp, you know, they're the closest comp to, like, are you going to take one of those guys, one or two, instead of Zach or instead of Sar, like the guys that are probably going to go mm-hmm. 1-2 tonight. And it's like, there were times when I watched Dalton Knecht and said, you know what? Yeah. Like, I'd take him. I don't know how. Is his defense going to hold up at the NBA level? Can teams isolate that and attack it?
His cold spells are pretty brutal, too.
Are his cold spells going to be like something? Yeah. But in a game where shot making matters a lot, there were times when I would say Castle would be the safest. You know, a guy that Auburn was in on for a long time as a high school player. A guy Bruce Pearl,
sure,
just absolutely raved about from my understanding, as you know, like that he thought that was the missing piece to. I mean, the thought of adding him, not that Auburn was lacking at, you know, high ceiling talented guards or something, but I think adding Castle to this past year's team does, you know, provide a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. But probably a Reed Sheppard or a Dalton Knecht would be Klingon would be, I mean, right.
Yeah,
right there.
I was going to say Klingon too. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Klingon, I think, is one of those guys where I just don't know how much better he's going to get. I mean, he was great. He was a great player in college. And I think it gets back to these NBA organizations. They're having to sit back and really reconsider which leagues they feel and which, I guess, organization, which path is better for the future of the NBA? Is it still going and picking college basketball players, or is it going and getting these guys that are playing in European leagues and playing overseas and playing in France or wherever they're coming from, because they're playing professional basketball over there, whichever country they're coming from? And so I think these NBA teams are really having to consider, okay, Which of these groups of players are more prepared to play in the NBA right now, and which ones are going to continue to get better and be good for us in 5 or 10 years? And that's a conversation that has not been had in a long time.
There's a question, too, of how much runway you want to have with your rebuild, mm-hmm. how much runway you want to give these teams. Because I think, for like you mentioned, who was picking in the top five, I would think that Houston and San Antonio, because they have stars right now or guys that are on the verge of becoming stars, like those are the kind of teams that could make a deal with picks to bring in an established name, a veteran, you know, there've been a couple. And that's the other intriguing thing about this draft. Maybe a big name changes homes tonight.
Like, a superstar, yeah.
Yeah, maybe a superstar. I mean, people talked about, does Phoenix wait, you know, do they wave the white flag and trade Durant or Booker or both? Does Atlanta look at Trae Young or someone else there? Does New Orleans make an Ingram related move? Like, there could be some big names on the move tonight, and those would be names that improve a Houston or a San Antonio to, I think that you know, those two teams are probably a big name away from being projected as a playoff team.
Mm-hmm. That Houston right team is stacked.
And Houston is Houston is probably on the verge of making the kind of jump that Orlando just made, where, you know, where they rebuilt, yeah, but they're, you know, the pieces, yeah, are lining up. Paolo had a great season. I think Jabari Smith and Paolo are, I think they're within striking distance of each other, mm-hmm, as players. I think they've got similar skill sets. Jabari's a little bit more of an outside guy, but it's still, like, to me, those are two forwards you'd feel very good about having the rest of their primes. And so, yeah, I want to see what – I mean, I think Houston and San Antonio could be teams that make a deal for a big star, or they go get somebody who is more of a specialized college basketball player, a scorer or a rim protector or somebody who – and, yeah, maybe the question isn't, are they going to develop into a superstar? The question with that would become more, can they help the team, you know, make a jump immediately? And maybe they don't have to do that much more developing, because we're going to see more veteran college basketball players in the draft too. For a long time, if you were a junior or a senior, you weren't thought of in the NBA draft, because why didn't you leave after your first year?
Right, you weren't good enough to go early.
Yeah,
so,
but with NIL, now college basketball careers are getting longer.
Yeah,
guys who could impact the NBA are leaving as juniors and seniors instead of as freshmen and sophomores. And so maybe teams don't have to do as much developing. There's going to be more ready made products available in the NBA draft, and that's where because Connect, a very senior player, 23 year old player. I mean, you don't draft a 23-year-old thinking, well, he's going to take a couple of years to round his game out. You take a guy like that thinking, well, he's going to be a starter for me right now.
Well, that's a really good point, because I'm looking on ESPN on their latest mock draft. This was like an hour or two ago, and they give the ages of all these players, and this is quick math here, but average age of a player that's in the projected first round tonight from overseas is about 19 years old. The projected college players are 20 or 21, if not older. And so, so 1 year is a lot of time, Dan. I mean, that's a lot of development time in the NBA with any organization. I mean, you've got a couple of these foreign kids and foreign guys that are 18 years old. And then, yeah, you've got Dalton Connect, the outlier, who's 23.
And so, and that's also why if you're Atlanta, especially if Atlanta makes trades to trade away some of the veteran players, you know, if Trae Young, mm-hmm, is on the move tonight or something like that, or Murray is on the move tonight, if Atlanta or Washington – it makes sense for teams like that to go younger and to bypass older college. I mean, unless they're guys that you think can be starters and really effective starters immediately.
Fill the hole on the roster,
yeah,
right?
Because otherwise, you know, a guy like a Dalton Connect or a Reed Sheppard, I could see why. I know Reed Sheppard's a bit younger, but I could see why a Washington or I could see why a team that's in for a long rebuild would think, maybe older college players, you know, that by the time our rebuild is in full effect, how many more good years are they going to have? Maybe they need to really prioritize youth. And like I said, you can also, they have the runway, they have the patience to allow a younger foreign player to develop in a way where, if it was a team in win now mode and you throw a 19-year-old from Australia or France out there, you know, maybe it could be overwhelming for a guy like that, and it could hinder them from becoming the best player they could be, which is something people think, ironically enough, happened to Darko.
Yeah.
Like if he had been on a team where you could be more patient with him and let him play more in his first year as an NBA player, maybe the story's different. But when you throw him out there with a Pistons team that is trying to win the championship, and in fact does,
yeah,
win the championship, like when you throw him out there with a team like that, It's you know, the expectations in year one are going to be different.
Sure. And you know, he got lost in one of the best draft classes, yeah, in the history of the league. And so, will that be tonight? I doubt it, but you never know.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about it. You just never know.
There could be, I mean, who knew? I mean, Jokic was drafted during a commercial break. Like, I mean, who knows?
That's true.
Like, you never know, like, how these things are going to turn out. And so it's wild to think that, I mean, a new, a new season in the NBA really gets going tonight.
Yeah, it does. And we'll have it right here for you on ESPN 106.7. First round coming up tonight after we're off the air at 6 o'clock. So be sure that you tune in for that right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You want to? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll take a break because we're still up there in the first segment here on the drive. Jacob hanging out with us, doing a great job at the controls. I'm in the studio. Drew and Bill both off. We will be back. Stick around. I'll tell you what. I'll give the phone number out. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You can text the show 334-564-1840 on the drive text box. That's presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Drive.
Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Jacob hanging out, working the controls today. Bill Cameron enjoying a frolic on the Gulf Coast. And Drew is attending to personal business as well. Enjoy. We'll have rotating crew of, rotating cast of crew. Actually, tomorrow I think it's me and Drew. And then we're going to try to get some Ferg action, but he's it's a busy week for Ferg with the nuptials on Saturday, and so we'll see if we can check in with our buddy Justin Ferguson tomorrow. If not, we will string a show together. Nevertheless,
yeah, you're flying solo tomorrow. No, I'm out of town. After
I can make
today.
It work. We may commit the sin of rerunning the John Cohen interview again, man. But it's a very good interview.
It was good. So, you guys did a good job.
I might have to toss that one. And he talks some between Beardy's Coliseum and some insight into the Nike Under Armour negotiations, mm-hmm. where how he landed on the Malvos because he'd hired the new softball coaches mm-hmm. at that point. So there's cool stuff there. Check the podcast out and track down the John Cohen interview. We played a lot of it yesterday, as a matter of fact. So you can find that on yesterday's edition if you hadn't heard it originally. But we're stringing shows together. We'll be off Friday and we're off a couple days next week, mm-hmm. right for 4th of July.
Yeah, you guys are a little bit different than I am. Of course, my show 2 to 4. And so I'm gone tomorrow and Friday 2 to 4 because I'm out of town for a bachelor trip. And then next week, I'm off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday because I'll be in Birmingham. You guys, I believe, are off this Friday. And then
we'll be on the air next
Thursday,
Wednesday.
Friday, Bill,
yeah, I think the full team should be here Wednesday, Thursday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday here on The Drive. And so we should be able to get things going there. Bill will be back from the Florida Panhandle by then. We are taking some days for July 4th. And then you and I are making the trip to Dallas in a couple of weeks mm-hmm. for SEC Media Days. We have a nice I've been pestering Steve to get it to him. We have a nice list of sponsors that are responsible for our trip, and I want to shout them out every opportunity because it's very cool that we're going to be able to provide four straight days of live coverage from the Omni in Dallas. We're going to be there doing SEC Media Days coverage for ESPN 106.7. Doug and the gang for his show, the Max Roundtable, and then Jacob with On the Line, and I will be there for the drive, and should be between the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, the expansion of the playoff, the dissolution of division play. Like, there's so many cool things about this upcoming season. I think there'd be excitement in a more traditional season because of Hugh Freeze going into year two. Mm-hmm. Like, there would still be enthusiasm and excitement about what this Auburn team could do this season and beyond. But then when you expand the postseason and you add an Oklahoma, the variables that have been added to this experiment in the last year or so, like, it really does make for, Media Days is going to feel different. I still remember sitting at Media Days when the news broke that Texas and Oklahoma were leaving the Big 12,
yeah.
for the SEC, and it's crazy to think that, you know, a couple years later we're going to be sitting there in Texas, you know, with Sark and Venables speaking at as SEC coaches in a couple of weeks, but that's, I mean, it's all part of this exciting new phase of college football and the SEC in particular, which. Yeah, I think the closer it gets, the more exciting it becomes.
Yeah, and something we had talked about was the fact that it's going to be different for tons of reasons. A lot of what you just said right there. How about no Nick Saban for Alabama? That's not going to be there for the first time in a long time. And will the quote Alabama Day still be a thing, right? For guys like us that have been going for a while now, Alabama Day was its own thing. It was Wednesday at SEC Media Days. That's what it was claimed. It didn't matter who else was there. Lane Kiffin could be there for Ole Miss. Didn't matter. It was always Nick Saban and Alabama Day at SEC Media Days. And so I don't know if that same charisma, if that same energy is going to be in the building on that day when Kalen DeBoer of Alabama walks in. So I'm interested to see what that looks like. And it's going to be in Texas, so I don't know a fan turnout, what that's going to look like. I know that's a big part of that for SEC fans. They get to show up and see their favorite folks and get autographs and things like that. But I don't know what that looks like in the state of Texas.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, if Nick Saban, the first SEC Media Days without Nick Saban would be a significant SEC Media Days no matter who was joining the league or how many spots were in the playoff.
That's a story in itself.
You're right. And I was there for Saban's first media days as Alabama coach in the Birmingham Galleria. And that was a frenzy in part because it was Birmingham. I think that it's probably less likely that there will be that kind of frenzy around Kalen DeBoer. There was also a desperation to win that existed with Nick Saban arriving at Alabama that has been, I mean, that they, I mean, they're still hungry, but it's not quite, I mean, they haven't gone years, decades without a championship the way they had.
Yeah, that void got filled
when Nick Saban, you know, had a decade plus without a championship when Nick Saban arrived. It's a very different situation Kalen DeBoer is walking into. But how Kalen DeBoer handles his first media days as Alabama coach, you know, there will be a lot of flash bulbs and a lot of microphones and a lot of it. I mean, that will, I don't know how much Nick Saban himself had to do with the frenzy around Alabama Day at SEC Media Days. You know, often it was driven by media and fans wanting to get close to Nick Saban, wanting to be in the room when Nick Saban spoke. I suspect there will still be that sort of interest in Kalen DeBoer at first.
In year one.
And in, you know, depending on how this year goes, we'll see how he's received moving right forward. But yeah, I think that Kalen DeBoer's first SEC media days, yes, it's the first one without Nick Saban, which is also very different, but it's Kalen DeBoer's first one in that chair. And that's, I mean, there will be all eyes will be on him when he takes to the podium.
And I have confidence that Kalen DeBoer is going to handle it just fine. I mean, I have confidence that he is a professional, that he's going to answer things the right way. And it's sort of like the narrative we had given Hugh Freeze last year was, okay, how can Hugh Freeze win SEC Media Days? The same question is going to be asked for Kalen DeBoer. Okay, year one at Alabama, how can Kalen DeBoer not even just win SEC Media Days, just not lose at SEC Media Days, because you don't want to be on that side of it, right? You don't want to be the guy, the coach, that comes out and says something controversial or slips up and says something that can be taken and run with the media, with sports talks radio, with journalists, with things like that, that people will be talking about until the football kicks off in late August. So how can Kalen DeBoer avoid all of that? We're going to find out. But I think he's going to be just fine, and I don't think that he's going to be caught off guard and just in awe of all the lights and the glamour and the microphones and things like that. I think he'll be fine, but they are going to be all over him and they're going to ask him every question in the book. I guarantee you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be concerning if he's not. I mean, as a guy coming from a major conference,
yeah,
a guy
who made the national championship,
yeah, a guy who made the playoff and won a game in the playoff this past season. You know, if he's overwhelmed at media days, like, hey, wait until you lose a game or two, buddy. Like,
yeah, I mean, wait until you walk into Baton Rouge.
Because it helps right now that not only has he not played a game or not coached a game at Alabama yet, but also they go into the season. Granted, it's not I would expect most of the media to vote Alabama, to vote Georgia and Texas as the top two teams in the league.
Yeah,
For sure. The national folks have mostly followed that trend this offseason. I would think that the odds would tell you right now Georgia-Texas is your SEC championship game.
Our media voting's changed. We don't get to vote for SEC West and East anymore.
I know.
We don't have to vote for the SEC.
I think we just vote 1 through 16 now.
Yeah.
And the top two teams will be your presumptive, you know, participants in the SEC championship game. And so I would think that's Georgia and Texas at 1-2. Alabama is still projected to be pretty good. Maybe a playoff contender, maybe a contender for that SEC championship game spot. The fact that DeBoer is walking into that situation makes it a little bit easier, because if it wasn't, you know, if the outlook seemed more tumultuous immediately, then you would wonder, like, I mean, if it's, oh man, he's stepping into, I mean, I guess that's sort of what Ron Zook found himself with, where it was a team that, you know, stepping in for Steve Spurrier, a team that had been accustomed to greatness, had a lot of holes, and mm-hmm. suddenly you're being blamed for losing four or five games, when it's fair to wonder if they would have lost those four or five games with just about anybody, considering who was on the roster.
Right. I mean, what if Bama was coming off a championship last year, right? What if Nick Saban had gone out, you know, into the sunset and come off a national championship?
Well, they are coming off an SEC championship,
yeah,
right?
They
did win the conference and beat Georgia in that game towards the end. So, I mean, they seem to go into the season, even if they're not the reigning national champion, they're coming into the season in a, and they returned the quarterback, which is vital to that, because I think if Milroe had moved on, there'd be way more questions about how, because often Alabama seemed to not have answers until he did something special.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, including in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
And I'll say this. I guarantee, mark my words, that Kalen DeBoer at SEC Media Days, and I know we got to get to the bottom of the hour break here, but Kalen DeBoer will fall back on at SEC Media Days. He will, a go-to answer and a go-to saying will be, we trust Jalen Milroe. We are confident. We're happy. Thank goodness we have Jalen Milroe as our quarterback. He will fall back on that numerous times in Dallas coming up in a few weeks, because it's the easy thing to go back to, and it's indefensible. You can't go against it, because he's right, because their quarterback situation is really good.
I mean, there's a handful of guys that have a real argument that right now they're the best quarterback in college football. I think, you know, there's Shedeur Sanders. It's complicated because they struggled so much as a team last year, although he's undeniably very good. Carson Beck, sort of on the other end of the spectrum, where that team is so good, you wonder how much of it's Carson Beck and how much of it isn't, although people talk about Carson Beck like he's somebody who could be a very high pick in the draft. And then there's Milroe, who's just, and you know, I would also throw, I expect Quinn Ewers to be your preseason first team all SEC quarterback.
Yeah. I expect him to probably be at Media Days, Milroe to be at Media Days, Beck to be at Media Days. So quarterback heavy Media Days.
Peyton
Thorne too.
I would think you're bringing Peyton Thorne.
You think? Even though it's not at that point, will he have been named? That again, this could be a conversation we continue, but will Thorne have been officially given the starting role? I know it's his to lose, but if you're do you go into
Thorne
that?
Thorne took so many of the first team reps in the spring that, like, at no point did it feel like another guy was in real competition to pass him for the job. I guess it would be, are there easier guys to take on the offense? Do you feel like Rivaldo Fairweather or
Jarquez
or Jarquez Hunter or one of your senior offensive linemen or one of your new receivers? Like, do you want to try to do it that way? I mean, as Peyton Thorne is a senior who started most of last season as your quarterback and goes into this season as your presumptive starter. I kind of think in that situation you usually bring him to SEC Media Days, but we'll see what Hugh Freeze decides to do. We'll take a bottom of the hour break. We'll be back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
Let's get back to The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. First hour of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Jacob hanging out with us from On the Line. will be going to SEC Media Days together, representing ESPN 106.7 in just a couple of weeks. Bill Cameron off today, enjoying a summer vacation for the next couple of days. Drew should be back tomorrow at the controls. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. As we spent to a little bit of the end of that last segment speculating on who, and I would think that's something. I would think that's something we learn next week at the latest would be representatives.
Will they do that for the 4th of July week? I mean, you're thinking so many coaches. I mean, Hugh's still on vacation or probably coming back. I mean, he's been posting photos and stuff.
I guess they could announce it the week before media days, the week after July 4th. But mm-hmm. I mean, of late, the custom has been, I think, even with adding two schools, it's still going to be three players.
I think so. If anything, it would go down.
I would think that they would cut it to two with, you know, if they wanted to keep it, if they're worried about time constraints. But lately it's been three, and I would think they're going to keep it at three and just add three from Texas and Oklahoma.
Well, think about the days now too, right? Because it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Monday, Thursday typically were three teams per day at SEC Media Days. Tuesday, Wednesday were the big days where four teams represented each day. Now it's four teams every day. Like Monday through Thursday are busy, busy, busy. You'll have two coaches and players in the morning and two coaches and players, sets of players in the afternoon.
And I would think that there's going to be a lot of interest because it's Dallas and because of the amount of media covering sports in the state of Texas. I would think, and in Oklahoma, I mean, Oklahoma City is an enormous market for sports media, and so I would think that that you could see for Texas, for Oklahoma, and for Texas A&M, a ton of media coverage making that trip to SEC Media. I'm told that Big 12 Media Days historically hasn't seen much of a presence as far as its radio row, but that could. And that conference, I mean, things are so spread out. You know, maybe it's tougher for markets to send radio teams to wherever they do media days. But I think the SEC is going to send a lot. You know, they're going to send the customary cavalry of media delegations to Texas, and then I think we're going to see a lot of new ones covering Texas and Oklahoma, and maybe some Texas A&M folks who haven't made previous trips are going to be able to go to Dallas instead. So even Missouri, I mean, there's a cottage industry of St. Louis,
that's a good point.
And I mean, there's quite a bit of St. Louis sports media. There's Kansas City folks who cover the Missouri teams as well, and a trip to Dallas is easier for those folks than maybe some of the previous SEC Media Days destinations have been. So you know, it's tough. It's a tough draw for, like, I hate it for my South Carolina friends and some of the folks who are Lexington, Kentucky is not very close.
Well, look, I mean, heck, Dallas, Auburn's not close. I mean, we're making I think the drive time is 10.5 hours, so you may as well just call it 12 with stops and everything else. I mean, it's a 12-hour trip that we're making, and so we discussed this too, you know, flying and doing those things, but the drive, you know, you have a car, you take your equipment, all that type of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's not easy for Auburn or Tuscaloosa or Gainesville, like those towns in Athens, like. It's not an easy trip to get out to Dallas. It's a trip to go there rather than the last couple of years where it's Birmingham or Atlanta or even Nashville was a lot of fun and still a somewhat neutral location where Texas A&M people had to travel a long ways. And, yeah, South Carolina fans were coming in. So, you know, it is what it is. And I'm fine with SEC Media Days moving around a little bit. I was sad to see it move out of Hoover, because I liked it there, and for people that listen to my show in the afternoons, you know that I, growing up in the summer, I would go to SEC Media Days as a fan. I was one of those people that would go and hang out all week long and just see and talk with other fans and get autographs and try to meet coaches and players and things like that, and that was a really cool time, and so that's what I hope happens in Dallas this year. I hope there's a ton of Texas and Oklahoma fans that decide to show up on whichever their respective day is and just show up and show out and have a good time, because that's cool for me to see, and they get a lot of good media coverage and TV coverage and things like that. So, Media Days is going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun this year, and it's rapidly approaching. I mean, we're about two 3 weeks away from Media Days. And yeah, the whole ESPN 106.7 crew from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., man, we're going to be there and having a lot of fun.
All right, we'll go ahead and take a break because we are we're going to get this thing back on schedule as we get closer to the end of hour number one. 334-321-1390. Jacob hanging out with us. No Jason Caldwell. He's on vacation with the family today, but we should get him again very, very soon. Andy Burcham was on vacation in his undisclosed location. He'll tell us all about it when he gets back. So a lot of folks out of town this week. Understandable, especially in the sports media game, because the folks covering the team locally, it is a quieter time than some others on the schedule right now. So it makes sense to get away with your family if you can. Bill Cameron's doing it. Justin Ferguson's getting married this week.
I guess that's big news.
Yeah, you have some other. He's talked about it. I'm not breaking that one. You know, he's talked about it on other outlets. That's publicly available information.
Yeah.
At this point, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. We will be back to wrap up hour number one. You are listening to the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
You're live on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Jacob at the controls, hanging out with, from on the line. Shout out Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, mm-hmm. as always. Appreciate the patronage there. I know there's some I've heard the family connections here and there,
yeah.
And I think it's such a cool story. And I mentioned something to Uncle T-Bone about it on my way in the house. Brian Matthews, when he's here on Mondays, shouts out the Red Sauce.
Good stuff, man.
As well, yeah. So if you're bringing chips and salsa to a gathering in the next couple of weeks,
yes,
worth it to try out our pals at Uncle Keith's. NBA draft coverage on ESPN Radio. That's getting going. When we sign off here with the drive in about an hour, we'll see who goes first overall to the Atlanta Hawks, the surprise winners of the NBA lottery, and then the Wizards, the Rockets, and the Spurs. We'll see who joins Jabari in Houston. We'll see who joins Wembanyama in San Antonio, among other things. And I guess, there, like we were saying earlier, the question of could there be a big star? Could there be someone who finds themselves on the move of the really noteworthy players in the NBA, especially the guys on in uncertain situations, guys who might find their way, guys who might be on teams that are about to decide to rebuild and change focus. So yeah, we'll see what happens with the NBA draft tonight as the NBA just a couple of days after crowning a champion, we turn the page on last season, and things get rolling as teams start to build next year's roster. You're a Celtics guy,
yeah,
and you guys, yeah. It doesn't seem like the Celtics have too many priorities when it comes to reshaping the roster this offseason or tonight's draft or anything like that. You know, that's it does feel like you guys are in the middle of what could be a golden era.
Yeah,
for the Boston Celtics.
That's the hope. It's hard to.
You already got one. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's hard to look at your team right after you win a championship and say, okay, what do we need to fix? You know what I mean? Like, what do we need to make better now? They are determined to do that. But this is a really good Celtics team, and they did a lot of their work at the deadline and even last year to get this season and this team ready to go. And, you know, the Celtics have that 30th pick. They are kind of bouncing around between guards and forwards on who they're going to take. There's been a ton of different predictions down there. But this is a Celtics team, man, that's just so well built. And from veterans like Al Horford, who finally got his NBA championship after what seemed like it was never going to happen. Jason Tatum, who is a young superstar who gets a lot of hate, but is a really good player.
Hitting on Tatum and Brown was so vital for the Celtics, because like a rebuild,
yep,
a rebuild like the one the Celtics were on, like when you, like we were just saying, with, I mean, at contrast that with what the Hawks or the Wizards are facing tonight, where it's like your hope is that you draft a guy who can become a Tatum/Brown level superstar for a really good team, for your team, during their careers. But
and you hope to pair guys like that up.
Yeah, but Tatum folks felt a little bit more secure about, I mean, and having seen him in college basketball maybe played a role in that.
Sure.
But it's also just, you know, different drafts have different calibers of players, and those teams are they're hoping that they've got something that can spark a Celtic. I mean, that's the dream as far as rebuilds right now, is to go from where the Celtics were post Big Three a decade ago to what they've been able to do over the last couple of years. We will be back with more. That's Jacob. I'm Dan. This is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Stick around.
Production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in hour number two of the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Jacob at the controls, Bill Cameron taking the rest of the week off to enjoy a tropical vacation. Drew should be back tomorrow. No show Friday for us. We are taking a personal day here at the show, but we'll be back with more. Yeah, we're taking Friday off in honor of Justin Ferguson getting married. We're all gonna we're all skipping work on Friday in honor of Justin, who might be here tomorrow, but he's got stuff going on. I know he's got family in town, so I'll verify that. We may get a phone hit, maybe nothing at all from Justin Ferguson. Speaking of the phones, 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar Cafe. You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. A reminder, this hour of The Drive is sponsored by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Big shout-out to the Orthopedic Clinic. We were talking in hour number one, a little NBA draft, a little previewing SEC Media Days and what's different and exciting about this upcoming season. Jacob, you mentioned during the commercial break, we had not talked very much about the news that broke during the almost exactly 24 hours ago. During our show yesterday, towards the end of hour number one, we found out, just as hour number two went on the air, the news that I think that's when the Texas 24/7 site ran with the story that Jim Schlossnagel had met with his team and given them the news that he was leaving A&M for the University of Texas a day after A&M falls in the College World Series, a day after Jim Schlossnagel infamously chastises a reporter for asking about speculation that he was on the verge of, in fact, taking another job. It turns out that Jim Schlossnagel is not sticking around Texas A&M, as he indicated at the time in his answer, and is making the jump. And not just making the jump, making the jump to the University of Texas as they jump into the SEC.
That's a leap.
You're gonna see them. You're gonna see Jim Schlossnagel next season in a Texas uniform, managing the team in conference play. Just a shot across the bow by the University of Texas to poach Schlossnagel and his entire coaching staff, according to reports, away from A&M just hours after they competed in the College World Series.
Yeah, this is a major story. This is something that it started going around because Schlossnagel went viral for all the wrong reasons, right? He was in his post-game press conference for Texas A&M on Monday night after they fell short in the National Championship Series against Tennessee, a series that they thought they were going to win after taking game one. They were one game away in a best of three from winning their first ever national championship in college baseball for Texas A&M. They fall two straight or lose two straight, and Tennessee wins the national championship. And so Schlossnagel is sitting in the post-game presser, and he's being asked questions about the game and everything like that. And as you alluded to, there was a reporter from TexAgs, friends of mine actually, from Texas A&M, asked the question. He said, "Look, coach, you've been rumored to possibly be filling the void of a job that just came open today, that job being Texas." The reporter didn't say that, but Texas just happened to let go of their head coach the day of the final game of the national championship. And the reporter asked him, "Look, your name has come up to possibly fill that void as the next head coach. Do you have any comments on that?" And instead of Schlossnagel just saying, "No, I don't want to think about that right now, don't want to talk about that right now, we just lost the national championship."
It's the use of the word unfair that I think people are really latching on to.
Yeah, he said it was unfair.
Yeah, the quote. Exactly, and it was Richard Zane who asked the question. The guy from TexAgs, mm-hmm. who I've crossed paths with at some point too. I recognize the name, but so the answer from Schlossnagel, quote: "I took the job at Texas A&M to never take another job again, and that hasn't changed in my mind. That's unfair to talk about something like that. I gave up a big part of my life to come take this job, and I've poured every ounce of my soul in this job, and I've given every single ounce I could possibly give it. So write that." Unquote. Now at the introductory press conference. That was today. That was today. Del Conte, and Chris Del Conte, the new athletic director of Texas, introducing new baseball coach Jim Schlossnagel. Jim Schlossnagel did offer an apology to Richard Zane at this press conference. Quote: "He asked a question that was an obvious question. I wish I could have answered that better, but in the moment, all 30 minutes after the last pitch, all I could think about was our players, and I really wasn't in the mood to talk about myself or the future." Unquote. I think that's largely going to put this thing to bed nationally as a story. Maybe Schlossnagel's reputation has taken a bit of a hit as a guy who, wasn't super forthcoming about a job he was about to leave. But for what this does to the rivalry, I mean, to take for Texas to poach a baseball coach who was as successful as Schlossnagel was, mm-hmm. this past season at A&M for a big chunk of the year, they looked like the best team in all of college baseball. He was highly successful at TCU before that. I mean, this is a guy who one would think he could have Texas competing at the top of the SEC very soon, and that is just that's a tough pill to swallow. For Texas A&M, who could still be fine as a program. I mean, they had major NIL investments, mm-hmm. to bring players in. It wasn't just Schlossnagel that had them competing, but he was the head coach, and now he's the head coach of Texas.
And that's where A&M fans are really upset. They feel like he lied to them, and he borderline did. He was like, "Look, I took this job to never take another job." But what he didn't tell you was he's been talking to Texas since before the postseason started, and at the end of the day, money talks. And that's what happened here. Money talked, money was loud, and Texas had more to offer. And so he jumped ship, and you know, we had Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, on my show today. He's normally with us on Thursdays, but he came on and was saying, look, if he had gone to take the job at Michigan or, you know, NC State or something like that, that's a different story. That would still sting. But the fact that not only did he leave Texas A&M, he went to one of their deepest, oldest rivals in Texas. That's what really has gotten this thing even worse and even more slimy is the word that I used. And it just seems wrong. You understand why he did it. Coaches and players nowadays have every right to take a new job, take a new spot, go to a different program if they think it's best for them. It's just it's that paired with the reaction and his answer to a question in the presser the other night. It's those two things combined that have people all sorts of fired up.
Yeah, I don't want to be unfair, because like you said, it's the business and coaches leave for better jobs, and the timing is unfortunate and the answer is unfortunate. I think certainly from the Texas A&M side, like a lot of it. Is he left Texas A&M for Texas. And you can say you don't like the answer at the press conference. You can say you don't like the timing of the move. You can say, like, I get that. But I think a lot of it comes down to, if you're a Texas A&M fan, you hate that this guy is leaving, and you especially hate that he's leaving for Texas.
Yeah.
And nothing that happens at a press conference changes that. Nothing that happens as far as when he decides to make the move, if it's today or if it's next month, changes that. It's that, I mean, yeah. Imagine, I mean, this is, the Auburn equivalent of this would be if Hugh Freeze had a highly successful season and then either Kalen DeBoer or Kirby Smart was poached by an NFL team, and Alabama or Georgia decided, you know who should be our coach? Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
And they went and they got him.
Well, I mean,
like
Auburn.
And we could say, oh, we don't like the press conference. We don't like the. Yeah. No. You don't like that your guy,
right,
the guy that you were ready to run through a brick wall for 24 hours ago, You don't like that he's wearing Texas colors.
Well, Auburn has a little bit of a related story. I mean, Aiden Holloway back in basketball season. Like, that is, I know it's not as extreme.
I think Schlossnagel was more welcome at Texas A&M than Aiden Holloway was at Auburn.
By the time the two guys left their respective programs, yeah, Schlossnagel was very much more loved than Aiden Holloway was at Auburn. But he left, and it was just fuel to the fire that he went to Alabama.
The perception that he switched sides in a rivalry,
correct,
makes it worse. I get what you're saying. To me, the really interesting contrast with Aiden Holloway is you look at what Holloway decided to do and what Trey Donaldson decided to do, because they're both point guards,
sure,
who had they were in competition for the same job for much of the season. I think it was they both decided to move on from Auburn to a different situation. Trey went to a team that finished last in the Big Ten last year, rebuilding with a new head coach and other pieces from the transfer portal, trying to bounce back immediately.
A sneaky good roster, by the way.
A sneaky good roster, but still, I wonder, like, they're coming from such a, like, but I do like what they've assembled. I wonder if it's a little bit like Ole Miss, where they've built a good roster, but there could be limitations in year one.
In a bigger, tougher Big Ten than it's ever been before, yes, with 18 teams.
Yes, and the depth is suspect because it's year one, like you said. So you have Donaldson doing that. Aiden Holloway, I keep thinking that, I mean, that this couldn't have been about playing time. Like, is it possible he's been sold on be the understudy for a year and you've got a leg up on being the starter in the 25 season? Because it maybe makes some sense there, but that's very different than what Trey Donaldson decided to do.
Yeah.
Like, Trey Donaldson prioritized playing time to the extent that he is going to a team that finished last in the Big Ten last year. Granted, it's Michigan, and there are expectations of Michigan basketball most of the time, but he's going to a last-place team. Holloway, on the other hand, is going to the odds-on favorite to win the national championship right now, but there's a question of what is his role going to be, how many minutes could he really see, or could he be, and for that matter, could LeBaron Filon, like, could they both be investments in the future who play very sparingly this year, but are a big, they're a big emphasis in practice, and they're a big part of what Nate Oates wants to do after the season's over. Because you do wonder how did you pitch guys like that on joining a team that already has a roster that looks the way Alabama does.
And maybe it's as simple as Nate Oates pitched them on winning championships and they believed it, right? They believe that Alabama is in a better spot as a basketball program as of right now to win championships. And while I think players in today's era, this is going to come out wrong, but I feel like the
front runners. A lot of kids are front runners and don't want to help build something. They want to be part of that. And no judgment to anybody deciding to do that, because if you only got 1 year in college basketball,
I get why you're
joining a team that's preseason top five.
Yeah, and I was gonna say too, I feel like championships are still valued and they're still being chased, but maybe not as much as they used to be per individual. And I feel it, which would go against what I'm saying if that's what Aiden Holloway was sold on at Alabama. Was like, hey, you may not be the guy. You could be the guy in the future, right, as you were alluding to, but come here to Alabama where we just made it to the Final Four. You can come here. We're going to win a championship here. And you know what? Maybe he believed him, and maybe Aiden Holloway really does believe that. I don't know.
I don't know which one is correct, or if there is one of the two where it's correct, where it's interesting that Donaldson – you know, picked the team that finished last year, but there seems to be 25 to 30 minutes of playing time for him as the point guard right now. Holloway, you know, maybe he decided to exclusively shop for teams that were going to finish in the teams that were preseason top 10, top 12, top 15 teams, teams that were projected to win their conference title, and that's part of the reason, you know, Alabama, and not to mention the idea that I could see a point guard thinking, hey, you know what? Like, give me a year of learning under Nate Oates and practicing with Nate Oates, and maybe my game will be different than it was the first year. I sort of get it, but I can't get past with Holloway and Filon how crowded the depth chart is, you know, for both of those guys. And it's like that is it's just not something you tend to see with five-star type talent. You don't tend to see them pick schools where, unless they plan on having long college basketball careers, which is also unusual for five-star type players coming out of high school. But if they plan on having long college basketball careers, otherwise it's unusual for them to pick a place that already had such a crowded situation.
Yeah, and so with that, the future has to be part of the selling point. It absolutely has to. But I'll say this. Longer college careers. Hey, we were just talking about this with the NBA draft. I mean, you are seeing guys have longer college careers because of NIL opportunities. It may not be at the same school or the same program, but you are seeing guys stay in college a little bit longer. And so maybe they are just preparing like Filon and Holloway. It's like, okay, yeah, we'll sit here for a year and then we'll have our time. But at that point, if you're Aiden Holloway, why would you leave Auburn? You could have done the same thing.
And Filon could have stayed at Kansas.
Yeah.
Filon could have gone to Kansas as originally planned and stayed there for a year. Kansas will be, if Alabama isn't the preseason number one, Kansas could very well be that preseason number one. And so, yeah, it's a bit of, you know, and again, without knowing all of the behind the scenes machinations of like what goes on in college basketball recruiting, and who's welcome where, and you know who can get in where, and things like that. Like you don't know if everybody is exactly where they planned to be.
Sure.
But yeah, I keep thinking, yeah, Nate Oates must have sold Filon and Holloway on the future to keep them in the fold coming into the season, and that's part of the reason why. I mean, we've been playing men's college basketball in the SEC for a century now. A little bit more than a century, and it's like we've never had a season where Alabama and Auburn are your two top teams in the preseason ever. And that's, I mean, I like what Arkansas has been able to do. There are other teams that have built, I mean, A&M's got some good pieces coming back, but like the top two teams in the SEC right now pretty clearly appear to be Alabama and Auburn, and we've never been in June saying that about the upcoming season. And like I think that's a reason for excitement in the state. And you don't usually have both teams feeling like they're genuine conference championship contenders and Final Four teams. And that's where both programs should feel they are right now. And that's going to lead to, on top of all the excitement about what's different about football season, around here, basketball season is very different, because now you have two, I mean, ESPN picked Auburn and Alabama to play Duke and North Carolina.
Yeah.
Because right now, ignoring history, ignoring what Kentucky's done in the past, right now the Duke and North Carolina of men's basketball in the SEC are Alabama and Auburn because of what they've done the last 4 years, the last 5 years, the last 6 years. I'm not saying Auburn has surpassed Kentucky or Arkansas or
That's what I heard. Okay. You say.
Well, that's not quite. not quite. I mean, unless you're also comfortable saying like Ole Miss has surpassed Auburn as a football program, because you could say the same thing where it's like I think somebody who just started following college football in the last 5 years would probably think that Ole Miss has historically been a far more successful program than Auburn. But yeah. if you've been following the sport for 10 or 20 or 50 years,
yeah.
you know what the Ole Miss trophy case looks like, and so it's like I do think there is a comparison between the way Bruce Pearl has changed the perception nationally of his program from what it was when he got there to what they are now. And there probably is some similarity between that and what Lane Kiffin has done to Ole Miss football. Granted, Lane Kiffin has not capped it off with a championship the way Bruce Pearl has. Bruce Pearl has regular season and SEC tournament championships. Ole Miss, you would think this is, I mean, if a disappointing year this year would be crushing because it's reasonable to expect SEC championship contention and a playoff spot for Ole Miss this year. And that's not, I mean, both Ole Miss and Missouri, that's not the way we usually talk about those programs, but going into this year, it's fair. And that is, we'll see if they can hold up under that sort of scrutiny. 334-321-1390, Dan and Jacob, this is The Drive. Stick around.
The Drive continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Dan Peck, Jacob Goins on the ones and twos, as Drew and Bill have the day off. This is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. NBA draft coverage on ESPN Radio as soon as we finish up here on ESPN 106.7. You're not going to want to miss that as the first round underway tonight on ABC. I believe ABC and ESPN. We'll have NBA draft first-round coverage. That could be wrong. It might not be on ABC.
Most importantly,
it's right here on we're going to have ESPN Radio's coverage right here on ESPN 106.7. 334-321-1390. I do think there's a chance Jalen Williams gets drafted at some point. Not tonight. I'd be surprised. I'm not going to say not tonight. I'd be surprised if somebody took Jalen Williams in the first round tonight because most projections don't seem to have him
right.
as a top 30 player. I think that he could be drafted. I think Jalen Williams has. I think he could finish. Yeah, I think he could go somewhere in the second round, or even catch on as an undrafted free agent and work his way into the league. Let's get to the phones. Caller, you are on the air.
Hey guys, this is Jerry.
Hello, Jerry.
Hey, talking basketball. What did Tennessee lose as far as, you know, people leaving, you know, or, you know?
So the big losses for Tennessee's roster would be, I know Ziegler's still there, but Connect is in the NBA draft tonight. Vescovi is finally out of eligibility.
after 30 years.
I believe Vescovi and Jalen Williams came into college basketball the same year, and both finished five year careers without a red shirt, and then the big guy, there's the big that followed them, he went to went to Arkansas, their rim protector, one of the better forwards coming back in the SEC, jumped from Tennessee to John Calipari's team at Arkansas. So they have Zakai Ziegler back, who's probably going to be a first-team preseason all-conference guard. But otherwise, I think they are – the perception is that they're taking a step back from what they had last year.
Well, just curious, I think Auburn and Alabama should be the top two teams just looking at the roster and – you know, I think they'll do well. I just wonder what the competition was.
No, that's a fair question. Tennessee's been one of the best teams in the SEC the last couple of years. I think that the belief as far as the tier beyond Auburn, I mean, I, Joe Lenardi, and we appreciate the phone call, Jerry. Good stuff from you. Glad we got to hear from you. The Joe Lenardi recently updated his bracket projection for next season, and there were 9 or 10 SEC teams, including Texas, in next year's NCAA tournament. He had, and I don't remember off the top of my head how many different teams, but he had Auburn and Alabama seeded considerably ahead of the rest of the pack. I want to say he has Arkansas as his third team in the draw. I know he likes Florida.
Florida, yeah, too.
I know folks like the roster. People are up on. I mean, Wade Taylor was your preseason SEC Player of the Year last year. He's back for Texas A&M, among other guys that Buzz is bringing back. Mark Pope. It's such a left turn from what Kentucky has been doing.
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, they could have the oldest team in college basketball with the way they've been recruiting veterans out of the portal.
Yeah.
Every single veteran they've taken is a guy that folks thought was a top four, top five defensive player at their position of the players available in the portal. So to go really heavy on, I mean, Lamont Butler.
That's such a good pick.
Yeah, Lamont Butler would play anywhere. And to add Lamont Butler to a group that's going to be really focused on defense and really veteran oriented. Like, I do wonder if there are going to be nights where, you know, they run into an Alabama or an Auburn and their lack of offense is a big problem. But I would expect them to compete in conference play against most of the league. And
absolutely.
And that's going to be it's going to look very different from the up-tempo freewheeling offensive teams that Calipari had with Kentucky, especially the ones that would go youth in the backcourt. Like, this team is – I mean, there are probably because they also added – the Estonian, Kirk Risa, the point guard from West Virginia,
yeah.
Who is one of the better veteran point guards that folks could have added out there. And it's like, this is, I don't know how many teams are going five COVID seniors with their starting lineup this year in college basketball. Kentucky could be one of them. And that is, I mean, you think about the super freshmen that we saw under Calipari year after year after year, to go from that to a team that has... someone did the math on social media, and it was like, you could be if the five oldest guys or the five guys projected to start for Kentucky actually start, you could be talking about 300 or so career games in the starting lineup.
Wow.
for Kentucky, and that's like and five first year guys with the Wildcats. So yeah, I think that the it's similar to Saban's retirement. The fact that, on top of everything that's different about the SEC, you have Calipari having changed teams and Kentucky going in such a new direction. The story is Alabama and Auburn, but beyond that, you could have teams trying. I mean, folks like teams like Georgia, maybe even Vanderbilt, Ole Miss. You know, teams that have not had a ton of men's basketball success lately. Like, this could be the year they finally break out of it and jump into the top half of the league. I really like the team that. I really like the team that Byington, the James Madison coach, has assembled. I mean, it's veteran heavy and it's mid-major heavy, but I like the team he's got in his first year there at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, this SEC season for basketball is going to be different because outside of Auburn and Alabama, there's a lot of question marks. There are. Tennessee, you know, they lose Josiah Jordan-James. That's another one that is not going to be there, and that's a Tennessee squad under Rick Barnes that has, I think, continuously underperformed with how good of a coach he is and how good of players they've had in the past. And yeah, that Kentucky roster is so experienced. The word, and I guess the description, is they're less raw than they normally are. I mean, they're normally so talented, but the question is, okay, when in the season are they going to put it all together? And it typically hasn't happened as much as John Calipari needed it to in Kentucky, which is why he's now being in coaching in Fayetteville, Arkansas. But yeah, I mean, you've got in bracketology, and we're so far out from this, right? Well, I mean, we're so far away from the NCAA tournament happening. But Ole Miss as a 7 seed, and Tennessee as a 4 seed, and And you start looking up and down this list, A&M as a 6 seed, and they do have Alabama, Joe Lunardi does right now, as a 1 seed. Arkansas as a 5 in Calipari's first year. How about Mississippi State, a sneaky good team in the SEC, as a 6 seed?
I like that they were able to hold on to Hubbard. You know, that's a guy that I think folks thought, you know, Josh Hubbard was going to be able to, you know, he was going to leave and write his own ticket and go play for a team that might be a preseason top 10 or top 12 team. Instead, you've got instead he's sticking around Starkville. I would challenge the, like, I think Tennessee has underperformed in a couple of NCAA tournaments, but like the win loss records year after year since that same year Auburn started winning under Pearl, like the way Tennessee's been able to build something consistent, that hasn't always been the case in their history. Mm-hmm. And it's like Barnes, he needs to shake off just the way same way Bruce did. You do need to get to a Final Four at some point and shake off that you can't win in the postseason.
Right.
It's a ghost that perennially haunts you. Barnes has been to a Final Four at Texas a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Folks at Tennessee would love to see him. It's the one thing missing from his Tennessee resume because he certainly won a lot of regular season and SEC games. It's just a matter of getting them over the hump in the biggest games of the postseason.
Yeah, which is where I think Tennessee fans are at right now. Regular season wins only carry you so far, right? I mean, those are only fun for a certain amount of time, but when you consistently come up short in the NCAA tournament, Tennessee fans expect greatness for their basketball program, as they should, and I think that's where they stand right now with their cards.
When you lose a close Elite Eight game, though, like, to me, that's, I mean, you'd love to go to the Final Four, we all would. It's so tough to come away feeling too jilted about. I mean, that's how far the Zion Duke team got.
Yeah,
and they were real good.
That was a really good team.
That's a really good team, and they got as far as the Elite Eight before losing a close game. All right, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. I'll tell you what, you want to get to the caller, and then we'll take a break.
Yeah, let's do that.
We'll push the break a little bit. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
We can hear you. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Dan and Jacob?
Yeah, doing good, man.
Good. You guys were referencing to Holloway and Donaldson. Has Coach Pearl ever said, or have they really indicated why they left? I'm still puzzled. I could see one leaving, but it just puzzles me that both of these top level players would leave. Do you have any insight on?
I would speculate, and I know Bruce has talked. You know, Bruce has talked a little bit about this, but he's not a dirty laundry guy. So, you know, anything that doesn't make either of the players look good, I don't think he's going to try to air out there for folks to hear. My guess is that after the season, Bruce decided, especially with some of the veterans coming back for one more year, he probably needed to go in a different direction at point guard and go get a proven guy who was going to play the lion's share of the minutes. And I'm not sure Aiden or Trey would have necessarily wanted to be the other guy in a situation where a J.P. Pegues, for instance, comes in intending to play 30, 32, 34 minutes a game at point guard. That might not be the best thing for either. That might not have been the best thing for either Aiden or Trey. And again, just speculating on the way these things sometimes work in college basketball.
On top of, you have guys like Pettiford coming in who are planning on being superstars in their time here. And so I think it's a combination of that. And look, those are two really good players, Holloway and Trey Donaldson. And I hated to see Trey Donaldson go. I really did, because he's a superstar. And I think he's going to be really good at Michigan. The Aiden Holloway thing, hated to see him go too, but we all know the rocky kind of situation that became here in Auburn, and so I think that was probably best.
But if Bruce had to choose between Trey Donaldson and J.P. Pegues for this season, I think he would probably take J.P. Pegues.
I agree 100%.
And ultimately, that's probably where that's where the conflict stems.
Yeah, I like Holloway, and I don't wish anyone bad, but by he going to the team over in West Alabama, I will not be rooting for
You're
him.
Okay if he misses some shots against Auburn, though. You're not rooting against him. But
he's going to have a rough time when he comes to Neville. I can tell you that.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus.
Guys, thank you. I appreciate it. I'll check back with you some other time.
Yeah, great, appreciate
great,
the call.
Great stuff. Appreciate the phone call. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. We will be back with more. You are listening to the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
Time to churn up some more yardage on The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final half hour or so of the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Jacob Goins from the On the Line show. From On the Line. It's not the On the Line show. From Jacob Goins in the house.
There you go.
He's running the boards. Drew is off today. Bill Cameron is on vacation. No show Friday. Are you doing On the Line tomorrow, or you're off tomorrow too?
I'm off tomorrow and Friday. I'm out of town for a bachelor trip. One of my best friends from Ohio.
Have you disclosed where you're going?
I don't know. It's not secret or anything. We're going to Michigan, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's my friends from Ohio. It's where I grew up most of my time. So my best friend from Ohio actually is getting married back in coming up in October. So we're going to a lake house up in Michigan for the weekend.
A buddy of mine lived in Traverse City for a while, which is a really cool spot in Michigan. They do some minor league baseball stuff. Mm-hmm. Up there, I was in Ohio near the Michigan border with the Trojans. They do a Sunbelt MAC challenge where we had a MAC team come to Trojan Arena. We played like Akron, I think it was just to start the year, something like that. And then I should probably know who we opened with. Well, I don't think it was the Zips, but it was Kent State. We opened with Kent State. We opened with Kent State, and then we went and played Bowling Green during their side. Bowling Green is pretty close to the pretty close to the Detroit border.
Yeah, I had friends that went to Kent State. Friends that went to Bowling Green. Yeah,
there's a Jets in the Bowling Green arena, which is nice. I know it's a little bit more commercial than some of like the real Michigan Detroit style pizza places,
right.
But pretty good pizza.
Still pretty
Jets.
Good.
Yeah, no, Jets pretty good. No, pretty good pizza.
It's pretty solid.
Stuff. And some of the national, like I think folks really like Domino's and Little Caesars and Hungry Howie's have some Michigan ties as well too. It's amazing how some of the national chains have sprouted out of that corner of the Little Caesars Arena in, I think, the Red Wings and the Pistons.
Is that what's in Detroit? Is Little Caesars Arena?
I believe it's Little Caesars Arena is where the Pistons play. Or that was the case for a while too, because it was.
Yeah.
And I know Domino's had like ties to like Illich was involved and stuff like that. So it's wild to. But anyway, enjoy your time on the bachelor trip. Should be a good time. But yeah, so we're planning on doing. Planning on putting a show together tomorrow. I don't know who's going to be on there. I might just scroll through my phone and start calling people and harassing people. That could be the second hour of tomorrow's show. No Drive or On the Line on Friday as everybody's out of town. And then next week, periodically, I think Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you're off.
Yep.
We're off Thursday and Friday. So some holiday hours these next couple of weeks. But once Media Days kicks in, we're going to be there for the first day, July 15th.
That's correct. Yep. Monday, July 15th.
Monday, July 15th, we're going to be there. And once that first day of Media Days gets underway, like it is a straight line to the Friday before the first football game of the season. And then it's football season and it's basketball season and it's all going to feel like it's really happening. And
we're
so,
66 days away from Auburn kicking off.
Yeah, we're very close to and then week zero a week before that you'll have some high profile games.
2 months.
We're coming up on handful of Saturdays between now and the start of the season, and SEC Media Days is only going to make that feel more real. We were talking a little bit about who Auburn could bring and who other
people.
I think that the Peyton Thorne question is an interesting one. If Hugh Freeze, it would be a real vote of confidence in his second year veteran quarterback. But it would also I think it would also open Peyton up to some questions about what folks might perceive as a disappointing first year as Auburn starting quarterback and expectations for year two. I mean, you have veterans on the offensive line, including Dylan Wade, who's back for a senior season as sliding in from tackle to guard. Rivaldo in his second year.
I think that would be a good one. I think Fairweather would be a good one.
Yeah, I think they're bringing Rivaldo. My guess would be Rivaldo. Now, if you went by guys who are closest to the top of the All SEC voting, I would think that Keontae Scott, Jarquez Hunter, and Rivaldo Fairweather would be your three Auburn representatives at SEC Media Days. Eugene Asante is something of a spokesman for the team.
Which I think would be really hard to not take him just because Auburn has really pushed him as like the face of the program in media terms and social media
posts. He's been very visible in the marketing, and they've been very comfortable having him as a spokesperson.
I mean, he was great for us last year for ESPN.
He was great with Tiger Takes. He's good when they put him out there as a media representative. So, I think the both. I would think that Eugene Asante, and for that matter, I always enjoy talking to Austin Keys, who was injured for part of last season, but is a veteran, you know, a confident guy, who's been around. Jason Jones has been around a very long time. That's a big dude to bring to SEC Media Days. There's no rule against bringing one of your exciting second year freshmen, somebody like a Keldrick Falk or a Connor Liu or Kayan Lee, you know, who you expect to be playing a lot. I think it would be fascinating to bring Cam Coleman or one of the true freshman wide receivers. That's a big spot to put a true freshman wide receiver in, and maybe Auburn doesn't want to do that.
I mean, you got to think about it.
It'd be pretty cool, though.
From the media perspective, I mean, how much can you really ask a true freshman about the upcoming season and about – because you take out all the questions from, okay, well, this happened last year. How's it going to be different this year? And you take out their full relationship with the coaches and the coaching staff, because they do have haven't gone through battle yet.
The most interesting thing that folks – I think an outsider who's, like, talking to Cam for the first time, the question you have is, like, why Auburn?
Yeah.
Like, There are other places, including A&M, that have more recently put more receivers in the NFL than Auburn has and have had more success as an explosive passing offense. You know, what convinced you to stay home and try to build something there at Auburn? I would be surprised, especially on a team in year two. In year one, maybe if you land a five-star freshman like at a high school, maybe you bring him in as part of it. I think in year two, Hugh Freeze would rather bring people that were and that's another reason. Not that guys like Bug Thompson has become one of the leaders in the secondary, but I think I'd be a little surprised to see somebody who just got here in January or just got here in March as part of the as part of the delegation at SEC Media Days, because you'd rather have people that were in that locker room
exactly
last year and can speak to what was going well, what wasn't going well, why they decided to come back, because it's a new wrinkle of Media Days. Every single player who is returning from, you know, if you stayed on the same team, like you had the option to leave.
Yeah.
Like you could have gone to the portal and you could have bounced, and you're sticking around. And so, you know, if you're Hugh Freeze and you bring back, you know, if you bring Fairweather and Jarquez Hunter and Eugene Asante to SEC Media Days, all three of those guys can tell their story of why they're back.
Like, well,
why
Keontae had, professional interest and decided to come back for another year. So there's that angle to that too.
You know what? I just remembered Jalen McLeod is in this category. Jalen McLeod is also, I think, in this mix and could be one of the choices.
Yeah. It's a good problem to have for Hugh Freeze.
Yeah. Like I could say, like if you told me, I go back and forth on Peyton Thorne. So I
just think that's too risky. I really do. I think it's too early for Hugh Freeze to just come out and make the declaration, this is our guy. Or maybe that's the strategy, Dan. Yeah. Maybe that's, okay, Peyton, you are our guy. We're so confident in you that we're going to take you and put you in front of the biggest media group you're going to see this year, and you're the face of our program.
I do think, I made this point on the Observer podcast recently, in hindsight, Peyton Thorne probably was done a disservice by everyone who paid so much attention to Robbie throughout the offseason last year, because even at the day where the press conference where Hugh Freeze announced that Peyton Thorne had won the job and was the starting quarterback, there were questions about what's Robbie Ashford's role going to be. I think one of the first
how much is he going to play?
Think one of the first questions Hugh Freeze got after, you know, at that press conference was, well, what does this mean for Robbie? What's, you know, well, Robbie's a weapon. Robbie's got to play too. And like Peyton Thorne at the press conference where he should be talking about why he won the job, you know, people are asking, well, how much is the backup going to play? Like there was a lot.
What's your relationship like?
Yeah, and to me, it should have felt more like his team last year, And because there was so much interest in Robbie Ashford, and I think secretly from some folks, a desire for Robbie Ashford to surpass Peyton Thorne mm-hmm. and take the job, it didn't feel the way it probably should have. And if you're worried about Peyton's confidence, I think the earlier you can, and I think Hugh Freeze has thrown, I mean, since the bowl game, Hugh Freeze has thrown the chips behind Peyton Thorne and said, like, this is the starting. Like, at no point has it felt like someone else on the team
right.
was the starting quarterback. And the fact that they didn't go get someone in the portal tells me, like, okay, well, this is going to be the starting quarterback. You can make an announcement. You can bring him to media days or not if you think that'll help. I think it would be a sign that of confidence in Peyton Thorne, not just as a player, but also as a leader and a representative of the program and stuff. If they decide to bring him, you could very easily bring Jalen McLeod or Eugene Asante or Rivaldo Fairweather or Jarquez.
There are easy choices to make.
There are other choices too. But I'd say it's probably three of those five or six guys.
I agree.
That are in McLeod's in that mix too. Like that those are your your short list of players at media days. We'll come back to wrap things up here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Stick around.
Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Wrapping things up on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Appreciate the phone calls. Appreciate folks listening in. Got a couple text messages as well, so we enjoy the outreach. Should be a fun next couple of weeks, although periodically going to be skipping shows as we got no Drive on Friday, no Drive a couple days next week. On the line, off the rest of this week, mm-hmm. on the line, going to miss the second half of next week, as well as Jacob continues enjoying the Celtics championship.
Yeah.
Going to continue,
yeah,
continue
his, right.
Continue parading around with the O'Brien trophy.
Yeah, we just ask everybody to have a little bit of patience, right? It's that time of year where 4th of July coming up next week and taking trips and things like that. Bill out this week, vacation. I'm taking a short trip this week. And it's just that time of year, right? Everybody's out doing their own thing, and we ask everybody for their patience.
So the Monday after 4th of July, we're going to do a week of shows, and then Media Days gets going.
Yep.
And from that point on, it is all systems go for football season. Don't forget, We carry the football games on Wings 94.3. You're not going to want to miss that all
selfless
season long.
Plug.
We're going to have, I mean, it'll be, Andy Burcham's going to hate that. I'm pointing. It's going to be Tiger Take season. It's going to be Tiger Talk season pretty soon.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be back hosting that in a month and a half. And we'll be getting closer and closer to football season. You're not going to want to miss any of it here on Auburn Network, Wings 94.3, ESPN 106.7, the whole gang. 96.3 W Lee gets in the
sure.
in the equation. Why not? For Jacob, this is Dan Peck. Appreciate you guys listening. Great job, Jacob. We'll be back tomorrow with more Drive. Good night.